Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We are so glad that you're here. So JJ has pointed this out, but guests and members alike, I want you to know the time of year that we're coming to. One is my favorite time of year. So we are close to Easter, and if you haven't already started thinking about and praying about if there might be someone that you would invite that Easter weekend, I would encourage you to do that. But not only is Easter morning a meaningful time for us as a church, but the Friday night before that, on Good Friday, we have a special service and Stations of the Cross set up, and that is meaningful. If you've never been a part of that, I think you will be blessed by that. It is a candlelight service focused on the cross, and in the gym, we have some self-guided stations, and I think you will be blessed by that. So if you've not participated in that before, I would encourage you to mark your calendar, get ready for that. There will be childcare available. And around the Easter time every year, we also enter into our Inside Out season of service as a church. And part of the reason for that is this: we want to fully capture what it means to be Easter people, to be resurrection people. And that speaks to promise after this life is over, but it also speaks to being a people who live into this new world and new reality and new creation that God has claimed us for and called us for now. And so we've got all kinds of wonderful opportunities to serve, whether that's night owls, whether that's Pack Shack, whether that is going to Ronald McDonald House and providing a meal, or what the group got up and shared a little bit earlier. We've got a lot of things coming up, and we want you to be involved in that. So make plans for that. You can see more information in the bulletin. Well, if you have your Bible, open to Luke chapter 22. And we are in a study right now in which we're looking at some of the last events leading up to Easter Sunday, and we'll focus on a passage that speaks more specifically to Easter Sunday when we get there. And we're going to start in verse 39. You'll see it on the screen behind me. Jesus came out of the upper room and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives. And the disciples followed him. When he reached the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not come into the time of trial or temptation." And then he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, knelt down, and prayed. "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet, not my will, but yours be done." Then an angel from heaven appeared to him and gave him strength. In his anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down on the ground. And when he got up from prayer, he came to the disciples, found them sleeping because of grief, and he said to them, "Why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you may not come into the time of trial or temptation." Okay, we're going to come back to the text in a moment. But first, I want to describe to you a TV show that my family has landed on as one that we can all agree to sit down and watch together. I don't know if you've had this experience before or not, but if we're all together and we're going to try to watch something, it's not so easy to find something that an 8-year-old and a 15-year-old and two adults will watch together. But there is one show that we've landed on. There's a few, and there's one show in particular, or types of shows that we've landed on. Those are some cooking competition shows. And in particular, we've landed on the show Chopped. So how many of you are familiar with Chopped, or you've seen Chopped? Maybe you don't watch it all the time. Okay, so if you're not familiar with Chopped, I'm going to try to give you the layout of what each episode is like. In every episode, there is the host. There are three chef judges who are renowned for their ability. And then there are four chef contestants. And within each show, there's three rounds. So there is the appetizer round, and the contestants have 20 minutes to prepare and plate their appetizer. And then they have the entree round, and they have 30 minutes to prepare and plate their entree. And then the dessert round, they have 30 minutes to prepare and plate the entree. And it is only at the very beginning of the round that contestants get to open the basket and discover the ingredients that have to be included in what they make for that round. So there's other food that they can choose from that's in the refrigerator or on a shelf, but they have to make sure that these three or four ingredients are worked into the dessert round and then the next round, whatever those ingredients are. And, there's this race against the clock. Now, this is kind of an aside, but it's probably helpful for me to tell you that I am a terrible cook, so my enjoyment of the show is not because I've got this great hidden ability. If I were on a show like this, it wouldn't matter if I had 30 minutes or 3 days to prepare. It would not be impressive. Today, chefs, I have prepared for you macaroni and cheese from a box, and a frozen chicken breast that was breaded that I purchased, and I've probably cooked a little too long in the microwave. It's a little rubbery at this point, but bon appetit, which is why I would get chopped, because that's what they do. At the end of each round, the judges will sample what the people have offered up, and one contestant is kicked off until it's down to the last two, and the winner gets $10,000. But part of what's interesting is the race against the clock. But the other thing that is interesting is it tests the limits of the creativity of these chefs to think on their feet and come up with something in the moment. And there is a detail to the show that I didn't tell you yet. And those of you who have seen it, you know what it is without me having told you. But in case you haven't seen it, when they open the ingredients for the particular round, they find that the producers of this show have intentionally put some odd combinations of food together to make it harder. It's not just standard ingredients that they have to work with each time. So, in one appetizer round, for example, They open the basket to find watermelon, canned sardines, pepper jack cheese, and zucchini. And they have 20 minutes not only to prepare their dish, but to figure out what in the world do I do with that combination. And the producers go out of their way oftentimes to make it not only just an odd combination, but often they will include at least one ingredient that is kind of odd or off the wall or unusual or something that I've certainly never heard of and some of the contestants have never heard of, much less knowing what to do with this ingredient in such a short amount of time. So here's just a couple of examples. They included this wild-looking fruit called finger citron or Buddha's hand. They included chicken feet, which I decided not to show you a picture of. They included squid ink, which you're wishing I hadn't shown you a picture of. They included in one round vegetable yeast spread like Vegemite, which looks absolutely delicious. They included in one round reindeer pate. You heard that right. Reindeer pate, you know, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. And I could go on and on with these sort of wild inclusions. And they do this for a couple of reasons. One, because it makes for interesting TV. But two, it makes for an interesting test. Can these people, who are accomplished chefs, who can do a lot with the usual fare, what will they do when they get this weird combination? What will they do when they get this odd inclusion? Something they never saw coming. Something they're not even sure what it is, much less what to do with it. And I happen to think that's a pretty good metaphor for life, because life is filled with all kinds of ingredients that we're comfortable with, that we're familiar with, that when we go to dish up our daily activities, we say, if I can work with these, I'm pretty good. I know what to do with that. I know how to handle that. But life also throws at us some weird combinations, some challenging inclusions, that we open up our basket and we have something we never envisioned. We have something we never imagined, but there it is. It's a part of the ingredients of our lives, and we have to decide, what do I do with this? How do I include this in who I am? So we heard last week, Jesus was in the upper room with the disciples. And he had just instituted the Lord's Supper, and then he decided that was a good time to warn Peter and the others that trouble is coming. Trials are coming. Satan has asked to sift them as wheat. The one that they have been following for years is about to go on trial, is about to suffer, is about to die. And so we heard from the passage that I started with this morning, that Jesus left the upper room and some of the disciples went with him. And he went to the Mount of Olives, to an olive grove on the side of the mountain, Gethsemane, which literally means oil press. And it is a place that Jesus apparently has gotten away to on several occasions. Enough so that the disciples are familiar with this. Enough so that Judas is familiar with this, because he's going to lead others there before long. And bookending this story, at the beginning and then at the end, is Jesus' urging his disciples to pray. Pray that you may not come into the time of trial or temptation. And after he gets back and he discovers that they've fallen asleep, and Luke gives this fascinating detail that they're exhausted from grief, and I've been there before, he says it again, why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you may not come into the time of trial or temptation. Now, you've noticed every time I've read it that I've included both words, and that's because this Greek word that Jesus uses here can be translated either way. It can be translated trial, it can be translated temptation, and depending on what translation you read, some translations will go with temptation and some will go with trial, and both of them are important prayers for his disciples to be praying. Pray continually, because times of temptation will come. They are coming. None of us gets around temptation. Not even Jesus avoided temptation. Temptation occurs whether we want it or not. There will be times when our integrity is tested. There are times when we're tempted to gossip or talk behind someone's back. There are times when we know we can probably get away with a half-hearted effort. There are times when it would be easy to cope with our stress or our pain by by participating in something too much, by turning to something that's good but not good in high volumes, whether it's throwing ourselves into shopping too much or drinking too much or getting lost online for far too long on unproductive sites or even destructive sites. We can't avoid all the temptation, but it is wise to avoid what we can. Temptation is not the sin, but it is the setup to the sin. So pray that you won't come into temptation. Pray that you will be wise about those times when you know you're more vulnerable. Pray that you'll be wise about those seasons of your life where you're going to find yourself more susceptible. Pray that you can identify those people in your life with whom you find yourself more vulnerable. Pray that you become more aware of those emotional moments where you are more exposed. Pray that your eyes would be open as you travel down the road, because we will all hit those accidents sometimes. But keep praying that you can see it in advance, so that you can slow down, so that you can stop, so that you can get in another lane, so that you can take an exit when possible. I think that's certainly part of this prayer that Jesus is urging. Pray that you won't come into temptation. Although I'm inclined to think that perhaps what Jesus has in mind is not just temptation from sin, although that is part of it, but he's actually thinking about pray that you won't get caught up in the trials that are ahead, because there are trials that are coming, not just for Jesus, but for all of the disciples. In fact, Jesus talks about this just a few verses earlier when he's in the upper room with the disciples. And he says in 22:28, you are those who have stood by me in my trials. Same word. And here's the thing. The trials are about to get worse for Jesus. They're about to get worse for the disciples. They are coming, whether you like it or not. So don't snooze. Stay alert. Pray that you may not come into the trial. You can't avoid all of them, but avoid what you can. Steer clear when possible. You don't have to go looking for it. I think sometimes, with good intention, we've taken some passages that talk about seeing God in trial and finding joy in trial, and we've made it sound like it's something that we should go looking for, like James 1:2, who famously says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, which is challenging enough on its own. But James is talking to people who are already in the midst of trial. They are swimming in the midst of the trial. And when you find yourselves in those times of trial and testing, by all means, look for God. Look for the good that God can bring in those. Grab on to as much joy as you can find in those. A great example that all of us have been seeing for several years is Haley and Michelle. And if you've seen Haley being interviewed on the news, he said multiple times, we're going to live by the three faiths, by the three F's, faith, family, and fun. For as long as we go through this, we're leaning into faith, and we're loving on our family, and we're going to find as much fun. We're going to grab on to as much joy as possible. When you find yourself in the midst of those trials, absolutely keep looking for God and looking for the good and grabbing on to the joy when you can find it. But it doesn't mean you have to go looking for the trials. They're going to find you whether you look or not. Jesus says, it's about to get ugly, so keep praying that when you can avoid those trials. He's not asking us to be masochists in this. But we also know that there will be times when the temptation comes and the trials come, which plays out in the meat of this story, right? So we heard the bookends, the bread on both sides, but let's come back to the meat of this story. Jesus has gone out to this place of prayer, the Mount of Olives, Gethsemane. And he's urged his disciples to pray, not to come into the trial, the temptation. And then he goes off just a little further away, and he's going to start to pray. Then he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, knelt down, and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." I find this fascinating that after Jesus urges his disciples to pray that they wouldn't come into the trial, and he finishes that way too, in the middle we see Jesus practicing what he's just preached. He's asking God that he wouldn't come into the trial. That's what he's saying. God, if there is any way to avoid this trial, that you could take this cup, I would be all for that. That sounds really wonderful. That sounds really delightful. Jesus shows us that prayer is honest interaction with God. Jesus is fully honest about what he's thinking, what he's feeling, what he's wanting. Why would we pretend in prayer with the one who knows us better than we know ourselves? Why would we simply put on a show? Why would we be anything less than fully and fully transparent? The cup Jesus is about to drink is bitter. It is brutal. It is beyond description for us because in many ways it is beyond comprehension for us. There is something so dramatic about this moment, so troubling about this moment, that Jesus, who has been preparing for a lifetime, is pleading and he's sweating like drops of blood. It is such a distressing thought and moment that Jesus needs angelic help just to comfort him in that time. And so there Jesus is. He's not putting on a show. He's not putting on airs. He's not just saying what he thinks he's supposed to say. He's laying it out there honestly. If you're willing, if there's another way, if there's something we haven't thought of yet, I would love to not drink this cup. Prayer is that honest laying out of our desire before God. These are my hopes. These are my wants. This is my petition. This is my plea. Be honest with God about what you're thinking and feeling and wanting. But even though Jesus urges his disciples at the beginning and the end to pray that they wouldn't come into the trial and the temptation, Jesus knows that there are some trials, there are some temptations. As much as we pray, as much as we want, as much as we long, that we cannot avoid. And Jesus lays out there one last time, if there's any other way. But then he reveals a mindset that all of us can grab onto, and that is this: our desire ultimately is to take a back seat to God's desire. That in the end, we surrender our ways to the ways of the kingdom, because it is not ultimately what I think is best or what you think is best, but what God thinks is best. And I can't help but think that this is the key to the whole story, and this is the key to an honest relationship with God. When we develop the discipline to make praying for and living into the will of God our daily practice, then when unavoidable trials come, and they will come, when we have those Garden of Gethsemane moments of our own, we have already rehearsed the words over and over and over. It's how Jesus taught us to pray. Lead us not into the trial or temptation, same word, but deliver us from evil and from the evil one. And through it all, your kingdom come and your will be done in my life as it is in heaven.